Welcome, everybody, and welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to have what I'm going to call the conversation of the moment. And the conversation of the moment is at face. We're sort of at the very introductory course level is, should Governor Evers run for another term? And was the compromise biennial budget in Wisconsin a good compromise or a bad one? That's what it is about in for the next 5 minutes, right? But the big conversation, that what those questions are actually about, is we have an existential threat in Donald Trump. It's a corruption existential threat. It's a rule of law existential threat. It's a small d democracy existential threat. It's a, does the United States still command any cadre or respect on the world stage? It's a global economic existential threat. But it's also an existential threat in each and every single one of our communities. What will the big, brutal bill bring? We know it will be bring pain, but how acutely will it be impacting our families across the state of Wisconsin? And what do we do about it moving forward? These aren't questions with easy, ready-made answers. And as I discussed with my first guest today, Angela Lang of Black Leaders Organizing Communities, there's literally a headline every day, a discussion on every talk show about how do Democrats unite to meet this moment, to keep their big tent big, maybe even expand it to include good faith conservatives who, if they picked up all of the things that, for example, the Democratic primary winner for the New York City mayoral race, Mr. Mamdani, has said, many of those good faith, perhaps centrist conservatives would say, no way I can ever support that. So how do we continue to expand the tent to meet this moment while not alienating our most progressive friends on the left? These are the complicated questions of our time. And again, everybody's got a slightly different answer. My next guest for this entire hour is one of the smartest women I know, not just in politics, but just smartest women. She is a successful small business owner. She knows a ton about the economy and financial markets because that's what her business is. And she's been a very well-respected and highly regarded state senator here in Wisconsin. When she talks, I find myself nodding right along because she sounds like a human being, for one, and she sounds both like she knows what she's talking about and that the solutions that she offers for real policy problems are achievable and not just left-wing pipe dreams. Welcome back to the program, my friend and yours, State Senator Kristen Dostler-Alfheim. It's a real pleasure to have you.
Happy to be back, Maggie.
Let's just dive right in. It was a complicated budget process. I think it was complicated at a very basic level because the governor had never been in a position before where Republicans could have needed Democratic votes. We had better maps, and so slightly more fair representation in the state Senate and Assembly, of course. And so, you know, again, his first navigation under those new maps. And what we saw was, I think, also Republican leadership not really understanding the new framework as well, thinking that they could ultimately, or hoping that they were going to be able to marshal unanimity and cram a budget through and tell Democrats to go pack their bags. How did this play out for you? We've had, and I gave my heartfelt congratulations and thanks to Senator Hesselbein for shepherding that. I think she's an incredible legislative leader. What was that for you, you know, up close and personal? And I don't mean to, you know, bring up what was very difficult and really down to the wire. But I think it's important for people to understand how this process actually plays out. You don't just, you know, exchange lists of your dream things like, dear Santa, this is what I'd like for Christmas. It doesn't work like that, does it?
Not really, no. I will say that, well, I think it was about 4 days after I was elected. We hadn't even been in, to the inauguration yet or signed in, sworn in. And we get an email that says, please have your budget priorities to the governor's desk by. And they gave us about 10 days. And as a freshman, I didn't even know that was coming. So there is a way that legislatures have to look at their communities and put in situations that their request. So there are on paper things that we've needed for our community that the governor has and considers whether to put in his budget. And then the thing moves along. And the governor comes out with his budget. We sit there and listen to his presentation. We're all excited. And then very much we hear nothing. Nothing. For months. Now, we weren't doing nothing. We were having listening sessions and town halls, and we were all over the place, and the public had a chance to tell us what was on their mind, and we listened and we took notes. Heard a lot at the listening sessions about education. Heard a lot about childcare, no doubt about it. But we wait for months and months and months. And as a freshman, as somebody who doesn't really know how it's supposed to work or how it's supposed to feel, I questioned why, you know. And then when we hear they're in negotiations, the government had the choice to go into negotiations with the Republicans. Again, you know, that's his prerogative, right? This is not an anti-Tony statement. It's just the path he chose. I think everybody knows that I questioned that. I had Zach Madden in my office, and I said, I'm not trying to cause trouble, but I don't understand why this would be the process. It was believed a long time ago, months ago, that the Republican Senate would need votes. One or two was the word. And I think that the thought of the governor's office, as well as the Republicans, were that they would just pick off one or two of us. And this is where Senator Hesselbein, leader with a capital L, truly, she pulled the caucus together and said, no, we're not going to let that happen. We will not let that happen. They need us. It doesn't matter if it's one vote or if it's in the end five votes. We are going to work as one body and come up with a list of things that we want on there. Now, again, the general public and the Democratic Party would, of course, say childcare, you know, public education, all of these things, expanding Medicaid. We asked for all that. So did the governor. And those we got as far as we got on that. But then we started putting in more things, you know, the capital for the UW, the AREP for the rural bridge programs. So we basically made a laundry list of things that once we got to the table, we would be ready to ask them. And Senator Hesselbein did a great job, you know, not just in holding her own at that table, which I think is a massive, massive thing, but honestly, leading our caucus, because our caucus is different than it's been. It's much bigger. You know, we added in four voices. The four voices that were added are in the new map in competitive districts. We have a little bit of a purple mindset across the board. We want to do what's right for people and children, but we also understand that there is pragmatism that must take place. And she worked masterfully in handling that caucus along with Senator Spreitzer. So by the time we actually got to the table and got talking with each other, it was 10 days before the bill or before the budget was signed. It was 7 days, I believe, before Senator Hesselbein even got in the room to talk about any requests. Again, there are strategies that people choose to use that would not have necessarily been my strategy. And I shared that with the governor's office. I would have done that differently, but I'm not the governor. And so we did the very best we could in the situation that we're given.
What I find really interesting that has been, I don't think, explicitly discussed enough is much like Senator Hesselbein did. Facing a Republican-controlled legislature, Democrats weren't going to be able to go in there, slap down the list, and get every single item on the list. That was not, if that is your objective, what you're going to end up with is nothing. And the best alternative to no agreement, right? Like your BATNA, which is a term used in negotiations, if you know that no agreement will actually be more harmful than the status quo, which is how I understand the budget would have operated without a budget or with a veto from the governor's office, that a bunch of temporary funding and things were literally peeling off, and it would have made things worse for there to be no agreement than what we had during negotiations and certainly vis-a-vis what we've got now. Is my understanding correct?
Yeah, I mean, we were told very clearly, and I believe that we, most of us in the room, agreed that the worst possible situation was going back to base or having no budget whatsoever. Mm-hmm. That was the worst possible option because childcare accounts had a hard stop.
Right.
It was coming to an end. There was no more money coming in. Where other things we might have been able to kind of tease our way through for an extra month or two, childcare accounts would have been dead, absolutely dead. So going back to base, there was a lot of harm that came from that. And again, in a perfect world, yeah, we could just wave a magic wand and the Republicans would say, okay, sure, you can have it. But that's not the way it works when they're in charge. They have the majority. They knew as well as we did that going back to base was better for them than it was for us because it was going to hurt our programs more than theirs. And the longer it took to get the budget passed, the more Republican votes were peeling off. They went from needing one or two votes to needing four or five votes. They were leaning back into the idea of let's just not have a budget then, because that would have been a win for the Republicans, not the Democrats. It would have been a loss, a harmful, harmful loss for the state of Wisconsin.
That is the piece right there. Yep. That reversion back to base would have been a big win for Republicans, caused enormous harm. It was not a salient alternative to an agreement for Democrats, frankly, because the people in our districts would have been caused a significant, acute amount of that pain. Folks, we're going to continue this discussion and move more broadly, throw our lens up more broadly. Is there anything else, Senator Dossler-Alfheim, that you want Wisconsinites to know about the budget? And frankly, just the concept of harm, sometimes harm avoidance and harm reduction, and the difficulty of actually building consensus across the aisle.
I think that we have to talk about expectations. You know, the public has done a fantastic job. The volunteers, the advocates have stood up and gotten loud in numbers about what we need to do for the state of Wisconsin, for our children, for our childcare situation. That is fantastic and it must continue. But being loud is not the same as having the expectation that we can just have everything. There's never going to be a situation where there's a complete 180 from where we are to where you would like us to go. We have to keep on asking. We have to keep on proving that it's the right choice. But change is the most difficult thing on the planet for people to deal with. That's the most difficult. So to go from here all the way over 180 doesn't happen. We have to work our way there. And if we're constantly disappointed because we haven't gotten all the way, we're beating ourselves up.
Folks, we're going to continue this discussion. Revolution, incrementalism, progressive left, centrists, how do we make it all work? Come back with us on the other side and join us, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.